Bradford's Brain Balloon, Apollo Special. Recorded July 23rd, 2019. As my loyal follower already knows, I'm a huge fan of space exploration. I got an invitation to attend the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum's 50th anniversary celebration for the Apollo 11 moon landing. Needless to say, I was over the moon. I have previously attended various events at the Air and Space Museum, but nothing that was going to be this special. Jennifer purchased a new dress, we both got haircuts, I rented a tuxedo, I polished my Captain America cufflinks, and we basically prepared for an event of the lifetime. We weren't disappointed. We were amazed at multiple points during the weekend, and I'm not going to go through every amazing moment because not all of them were involved AV. So the first thing I want to start with is just how amazing it was seeing a full-size Saturn V rocket, all 353 feet of it, standing upright, projected onto the Washington Monument. I'm probably not going to forget that ever. Then you add on the fact that the crawler underneath it's another 25 feet tall, so you're looking at a 36-story projection. When you deal with rockets in space, getting a sense of scale is always really hard. I've seen a Saturn V rocket many times. I've seen it laying down at the Saturn V Visitor Center when I was an integrator working on that project. It's not the same. You don't quite get the towering, for no other better way to put it, overview of it. I've been inside the Vehicle Assembly Building at Kennedy Space Center. You can see that building from miles around. That still didn't give me an idea of just how huge the rocket was. Beyond just the projection on the monument, there were five displays on each side as well, plus a horizontal display in the center that for the first few minutes I thought was just a replica of the clock at Kennedy Space Center, the big digital clock with each number made up of individual bulbs. It's not actually that. It started to change during the event. The five displays on each side were not the same proportions. The banks were mirrored across the mall so that you had these displays kind of fanning out from the center. Now, we can talk about it, and I'm going to say they're probably 10mm LED video boards, but the source material wasn't going to be amazing anyway because it was all from 1969. Now, I'm sure there's some video graphics that were done, but that overall look on those boards was still from 1969. I also really liked the fact that there was open captioning and other text on the header above the border, above the display boards. And I'm not really sure if it was projected or simply the video board had a piece of scrim over the front of it. Either way, it was nice and something that we as AV designers should think about. It was actually designed in from the beginning. It was really easy to see that this had been thought out and devised well. Getting back to the video surfaces, they all provided unique content. So it wasn't just a mirror or an extension. Each one of the five on each side could be displaying its own content, plus the clock that wasn't a clock down in the center, and the monument itself. So for example, during the liftoff, the left display had a detail of a rocket on it without an umbilical. The right display had an umbilical disconnect as a detail. During the scene of Kennedy's 1962 Rice speech where he said we're going to the moon, not because it is easy, but because it's hard, the banks on the side showed the crowds, enhancing the feeling, giving you an idea of just how many people were there, but also making it so that we felt like we were part of the crowd. The center display started to surprise me because it changed its use during the process. It would show altitude, it would show speed, it would show time. Basically, it was doing what you want video to do. It was helping to tell the story. Of course, the big moment was launch. And not just for the audio impact, but for the experience in the huge sea of people. The news indicated there were about 60,000 people there each night for each show. I saw the show twice, and each time the countdown reached zero, the crowd would applaud. Everyone goes, okay, that's applause. We know what golf claps are and the polite opera claps and things like that. I can't really call this anything else other than a rocket launch clap. because it's not the applause you get after a concert or a play. These were more euphoric and supportive and proud that, you know, the U.S. was going to the moon. The only other time I've actually experienced applause like this has been at actual launches. It's kind of like the launch itself. Until you experience in person, it's a hard thing to explain other than a visceral feel. I've gotten to go to a couple of them just because of having worked and lived in Florida for quite a long time. It's something you really can't simulate. There's so much energy coming out. So much of it is acoustic energy. It actually distorts the air in reality. It hits over 160 decibels of sound pressure level. Yes, 160 dB SPL. Like, for instance, one of the things I learned along the way is that the water deluge under the rocket engine, it's not for cooling. It's to help absorb and disperse the acoustic energy so it doesn't bounce back and damage the ship. The subwoofers and low frequency did a really good job of keeping up with the launch effect. But it was just that, a launch effect. There's no way to get that sound without some serious energy, and I just don't think that would be possible on something this scale. One of the things, since you heard me talk about scale, is the overall scale of this, and the scale of the Saturn V, and the scale of going to the moon. My guess is we were 100 feet back from the video displays, and the displays were probably 800 to 900 feet away from the monument. And I know there were subwoofers and delay towers used all the places. I know that there was audio probably on the video displays, but everything was scaled proportionally, so you got big sound. The delay towers worked with it, and it just became overwhelming of how large things were. That's really what it's like. So I'm going to say something that's going to surprise a lot of people. The audio sounded like a nice stereo mix. I really didn't pay much attention to it. Yep, didn't pay attention to it as a technical piece. It was a part of the experience and helped tell the story. I was just too involved in the show, and it didn't distract from it. Like many other AV people, I can't help but notice the audio and video system in most places. You know, I pick my movie theater by the audio and video quality. I can point out loudspeakers while riding Space Mountain. Of course, I always say I can EQ or mix something better. I didn't do that here. I was just so drawn into the story and the experience. I was too engaged. To be honest, I don't know the last time that's happened. I'm seriously scratching my head going, that probably hasn't happened in over a decade, if not since last century even. Now, I'm not saying it was an amazing, over-the-top mix. I'm also not saying it was a horrible mix. I'm saying I just didn't hear it as a mix. I just heard the event. And that's truly, to me, the high point of it. It just added to it. Going to the Smithsonian to celebrate the 50th anniversary of humans landing on the moon, it's obviously a once-in-a-lifetime experience, but also just the experience itself is unique. I got to experience a lot of cool things. I got to spend time alone with Neil Armstrong's A7 spacesuit, the one he wore on the moon, but I was enthralled by it. I'll put a link to a picture that Jennifer snapped of me as she said, "You can just see me soaking it in." I got to hear Buzz Aldrin and Michael Collins talk about the mission, and I was close enough I didn't need the PA system. I was just listening to them. I actually got to talk with some astronauts. Charlie Bolden, who was a former astronaut and a director of NASA, was there. He and I spoke for a little bit. I will admit, I do feel a little bad for Adam Savage, though. He didn't get his chance to meet me. Now, maybe in the future he'll get that chance again, but, you know, it is his loss, and I'll try to make it up to him later. But the coolest thing out of all of this was the experience on the mall. I really liked that the last showing they did something sneaky. It's supposed to start at 10 p.m. Eastern time, and what they did is they delayed it, and they didn't really say why, but I kind of figured it out. It was to line up the time of the first step on the moon 50 years ago with the video that was being displayed on the mall. And that's those little details that make things truly different. And I'll also say, this was great content. The experience was for all ages. It didn't matter if you're a space fan like me or someone who was just in DC and decided to go see it. But the most amazing thing to me, like I said, the system did what it needed to do. It supported the storytelling and the experience. And I was able just to enjoy it. I didn't even have to think, oh, I should change this or that. I just enjoyed it. And isn't that really what we're all aiming for? To help create a unique experience for someone? Thanks for listening. Hopefully there'll be another Bradford's Brain Balloon again soon. We'll see how the time goes. Be nice to everyone, and I'll talk with you later.